Hey there, welcome to the Armstrong and Getty Show. We have discovered few and launched few people into stardom. But we feel like we have launched...
including ourselves.
But we feel like we have launched Timothy Sandifer into stardom, and deservedly so. He was headed there anyway, and, you know, all we did was, you know, jump on.
Tim's vice president for litigation at the Goldwater Institute. Before joining Goldwater for 15 years, he was a litigator at the Pacific Legal Foundation, both organizations we are big supporters of. Tim won several important victories for economic liberty in several states. His new book is The Permission Society, How the Ruling Class Turns Our Freedoms into Privileges and What We Can Do About It. Tim Sandifer joins us now. Hey, Tim, how's it going?
It's great. How are you guys?
Excellent.
How's your life, Tim?
Pretty good, especially today. We've had some really big news in the freedom movement today.
Yeah, I saw that.
I was going to say, I think that's a perfect way to get into the book and what the book's all about. Tell us the breaking news.
Well, as you know, we've been talking for some time about this law, these laws called Right to Try, which these are a project of the Goldwater Institute. These are laws that at the state level that guarantee the right of terminally ill patients to use medicine that has been approved for safety by the FDA but has not yet received final federal bureaucratic approval for sale on the open market, which can take a great deal of time. It can take years and millions of dollars to get drugs approved. And so we have safe and effective medicines that are sitting there waiting for final bureaucratic approval while people need them, and Right to Try allows people to use these medicines. Now, these laws are on the books now in 31 states, and this morning, in testimony before the U.S. Senate, a doctor named Dr. Del Passon from Houston, Texas, testified that he has used Texas's Right to Try law to treat more than 75 patients for cancer. Using a drug that the FDA has sitting there that they've said is safe
and keeping in mind
in clinical trials.
Keeping in mind is often being used everywhere else on earth but the U.S.
That's right. These are treatments that have been approved for sale in Europe. And if you are rich enough to be able to afford to fly to Europe to get this treatment, then you can get it, but not if you stay in the United States.
I don't remember. I always like to put this in because it's the most appalling part of it. One of the reasons the government says they don't want people trying these drugs is because they're afraid they'll give people false hope.
Yeah,
which
that's
is,
right.
It's the most appalling thing I've ever heard out of the government. Right. You're in the business of deciding how much hope I should have.
Right. Meanwhile, back at the testimony.
And California, you know, passed the Right to Try law, and Governor Jerry Brown vetoed it only a few days after having signed into law a bill that allows people to the right to die, so that it is now legal in California to take a medicine to kill yourself, and it's legal to use marijuana, which is a violation of federal law. But you can't use a medicine that is being administered by the federal government in clinical trials, but which the FDA has not yet approved for final sale.
Boy, now, we missed that somehow, that crazy old Uncle Jerry vetoed that drug. I would have gone bat-ass. I'll wait till you're off the air, but go on, sir.
It is insane. And fortunately, the California legislature has repassed the bill and has sent it to Governor Jerry Brown's desk, and it's sitting there right now. So I would ask that your listeners who care about the rights of terminally ill patients to use medicines that might save their lives. I mean, this is a decision that should be up to the patient, not up to bureaucrats.
Obviously, freaking obviously. What is the argument from Jerry Brown's side?
When he vetoed the bill, he said, well, I think we need to let the federal government have a chance to fix this problem. Well, we've been waiting for the federal government to fix this problem for decades, and it's failed to do so.
And what does that have to do with the individual rights of the people who have a terminal illness? God, everybody, we've got to hammer Jerry Brown today. Absolutely hammer him. Email him.
You can't let him get away with the hypocrisy on that. You don't feel that way about immigration law. You don't feel that way about marijuana, that you got to have the federal government fix this. But on this one, you do. I don't get it.
I mean, the bottom line is, whose life is it anyway? And this is what my book really talks about. And I need to stop and say, you guys inspired this book. And I as I say in the acknowledgments, this book was inspired by conversations with you guys, because you guys so often point out that whenever we talk about whenever we use the word permit, government permit, that means permission. You're having to ask the government for permission, whether it be to build a house or buy a gun or start a business, or in the case of medicine, what is a prescription? A prescription is a government permit for you to have a medicine. So throughout our lives, the government is forcing us to ask permission to do things with our own lives and with our own property, and that causes all sorts of problems. It basically presumes that you are not a free person until somebody some government bureaucrat gives you freedom.
I think it's explained beautifully in the website here at Encounter Books, and we'll have the link so people can find it effortlessly. But you point out that throughout history, the kings, the emperors have promised freedom to the people, but really it's just freedom to do what they tell you you're allowed to do. And that the point of the American experiment was, listen, you can live your life any way you want. There are going to be a few things that aren't cool because they might hurt other people. But other than that, you are a free people. And that's been turned on its head.
That's right. If you look at, say, the Magna Carta from 800 years ago, the Magna Carta is this great monument in the history of freedom. But when you actually read the Magna Carta, what it says is, I, King John, am giving the following freedoms to my subjects. Well, now compare that to the Declaration of Independence or the Constitution that say, we the people are fundamentally free and we're going to give the government certain powers. That's a completely different view. Huh. That says people are basically free unless they're going to hurt some other person, as opposed to the old system that said you're not free until the government gives you freedom. And unfortunately, throughout every area of our lives, we're moving more and more back to the permission society where the government gives us permission to, you know, in this case, use medicine, but whatever it might be.
You know, we're used to just inspiring acts of violence or vomiting. So that the fact that we've inspired such a fabulous book is really, really, really cool. The thing we've always said is, and this was inspired by you, was never use the word permit as a noun without using it as a verb. Wait a minute. The government is going to permit me to expand my back patio by 2 feet. Why has the government got to permit me to do that? I don't have the freedom to make my patio 2 feet bigger. I want it bigger. That ought to gall you.
Whenever the government is in the position of giving you permission or not, then that means it's also in the position of being able to demand something back from you in exchange for that permission. So you want to expand your back patio, you go and you apply for a permit to do so. Now the government can come to you and say, okay, well, if you want this permit, you have to give us cash, or you have to give us some of your land. I mean, that may sound extreme, but that happens all the time. There's a case that I talk about in which, in Florida, a property owner who owned about something like 13 acres of land wanted to develop it, and the government said, okay, well, you can develop 3 acres of it, but you have to give us 10 acres. And then when he was so pressed for cash, he said, okay, and he was willing to do that. And then the government said, and you also have to pay us $100,000 to restore government-owned property miles away that has nothing to do with your project just because we want to. And the U.S. Supreme Court, fortunately, after a 20-year delay of litigation, finally ruled in his favor and said that was taking away his property.
Well, which you know, is important from a legal standpoint. Didn't help him a lot, I'm guessing, 20 years later.
No, he was dead by the time that the case was
decided. Wow. And by the way, this might help people understand what we're talking about. A friend of mine is doing something entrepreneurial. He's trying to open a business. And as it turns out, the space that he needs, the zoning has to be changed from commercial to recreational. Now, they're not laying any sewers. They're not going to put in a street or a sidewalk or streetlights or anything. It's purely a change in paperwork. $160,000 for the government.
Oh my gosh.
For the government to give him permission to occupy that building doing something slightly different than they thought would probably happen in that building. $160,000. Now, he pushed a little bit and got that reduced significantly, and I probably am effing it up by jumping into it right now. But how is it that it's $160K, unless you say, good God, I don't have $160K. Then they say, all right, that was about like $100 or
because
something like
it's
that.
Made up. That's why.
Because it's a mob.
Wow. Totally. It's out-and-out extortion is what it is. If the mafia came to you and said, it's a nice business you got here. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. Why don't you give me $160,000 and I'll make sure nothing happens to your business? That would be crime. That would be prosecuted under the racketeering laws. But when a government official comes to you and says exactly the same thing and does exactly the same thing to you, we call it rational zoning and land use planning.
You're not a convincing-sounding mobster. I think you're just too nice a guy. I think it's just in your genes.
That's why when I was inspired to an act of violence by Joe's rhetoric, I wrote a book.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about writing a book and everything. We're going to take a little break and have more with Tim Sandifer and his book, The Permission Society. And because your title, you got to have a second title in the modern book world. Everybody knows that. You got to have a title, and then you've got to have the how or what or whatever sure. underneath it. But so it's The Permission Society, How the Ruling Class Turns Our Freedom into Privileges, and What Can Be Done About It. I want to talk about the what can be done about it, get a little of your opinion about the presidential race, just because I know it'll be entertaining.
Oh, no. And, No. I veto that.
Well, how it fits into The Permission Society, because I'm sure one or both of the candidates are standing up for what's good and right.
Oh, Lord.
That probably angered Tim right there by me saying both of the candidates. Because there are a couple others. Stay with us. You're listening to the Armstrong and Getty Show. Hey there, and welcome to the Armstrong and Getty Show. The book is The Permission Society. Somebody just stopped me in the hallway and said, I got to get a copy of that book. So we're already reaching people for Tim Sandifer, our old friend Tim the Lawyer.
The Permission Society, How the Ruling Class Turns Our Freedoms into Privileges and What We Can Do About It. Tim Sandifer is with us, Tim the Lawyer. Hey, Tim. Any more examples we ought to hit of what ought to be freedoms that have been turned into paid privileges?
Oh, there's so many. A good example that that really drives me crazy are laws called Certificate of Need laws that say that you're not allowed to start a business without first getting permission from all of the businesses in the area. So the example that I talk about mostly in the book is moving companies. You can't start a moving company in about half of the states of this country without first getting permission from all the existing moving companies. And guess what? They're typically not interested in having more competition.
That's insane. How does that happen?
These laws were written in the 19th century to regulate railroads, and when the automobile was invented, the laws were never rewritten. And so they say they apply to carriers of people or property, and so they remained on the books and apply to moving companies. And of course, the existing companies like these laws because it keeps out competition, and the general public doesn't know anything about them. And so an entrepreneur who wants start a new company, you know, it ought to be really easy to start a moving company in this country. You ought to be able to take a truck and paint the word mover on the side, and there you go. But instead, you have to go through a bureaucratic process to prove to government officials that there's a public need for a new moving company, whatever that means. And nobody knows what it means.
And meanwhile, you've got to lay a bunch of money on a bunch of people to have them let you do it. God, it is so, like, mobbed up Putin's Russia style in the so-called land of the free. It's enough to make you nuts.
And the thing that drives me craziest about it, the thing that really upsets me, isn't all of the corruption is bad and all of these restrictions are bad. But to me, the worst part of the Permission Society is the way that it stifles innovation and creativity. If I've got a new idea for an invention or a new idea for a new business, and then somebody tells me, oh, well, you know, it's a great idea, probably would work, but you never really know, and you're going to have to go through this incredibly time-consuming and detailed and bureaucratic process and pay, you know, $160,000 in order to get a permit, well, chances are I'm going to say, I'm just going to stick with what I got. Why bother? Why put in all that effort? And so then the rest of us are robbed of this idea, this possible, the possibilities and the opportunities disappear. And who knows then what other opportunities might have been based on my new invention or something. And so we kill all this wealth before it's ever created. It vaporizes before it's ever invented. And there's no way to calculate the cost that these restrictions impose on all of us because they're invisible.
We get comments like this all the time, and this is what we're up against. We got this text. So I guess you guys are against building codes in the United States? So because we're discussing the idea of increasing the size of Joe's deck by 2 feet, and that's what we're up against just in general with the libertarian point of view. Happens all the time. You mentioned being a libertarian, and somebody says, oh, so you don't like roads or the military. I suppose you do like that. Oh, okay, so the government's fine if they provide roads and military. It's impossible to come up with any limited government argument that works for most people because I don't know if people are stupid or in a hurry or whatever. Either you're for big government or anarchy, I guess, is the situation.
Well, and besides, let's take a look at building codes. Building codes actually are provided by private property owners on the free market in the form of insurance rules. An insurance company comes to you and says, look, I'll insure your building, but only if you make sure that there are sufficient fire escapes or fire extinguishers or whatever it might be. And those are the same things as building codes. In fact, government often uses insurance rules in order to write the building codes. And look at the idea that well, we wouldn't have rational land use planning if it weren't for zoning and things. If you look at the zoning map of Manhattan today, it's every bit as crazy, quilt, and chaotic as it was 100 years ago. The difference is that all the exemptions and exceptions and grandfather rules and all these other little those are all done politically now, instead of by people deciding for themselves whether they want to have a building like this in this area. Those decisions instead are made by the politicians rather than individual citizens on the free market.
Well, and then the rich and the powerful that are able to influence the politicians. So if you're for the downtrodden, you should be more libertarian just for that reason.
Exactly. Those who have the most political influence and power can always game the system to benefit themselves. I mean, powerful politicians and powerful and wealthy actors, they can often get the experimental medicines that they need, even with the bureaucratic restrictions in place. They can build their houses, even with the zoning rules in place. But you and I, we don't have that kind of influence. And so the laws, these bureaucratic rules, close the doors to us.
Excellent point. The people that are against, you know, right to try drugs, they're going to go to Europe and try the drugs because they can and have the connections or the wealth.
Right. You point out in the book, the introduction, some of the freedoms that have been turned into privileges that we have to pay for: the right to speak freely, to earn a living, to own a gun, to use private property, to take medicine, to save your own life. Do we need... Well, part of the subtitle is what we can do about this trend.
Is Donald Trump.
Okay. Beautiful. What can we do about it?
I think the bottom line on that point is no. What can we do about it? I think there is no easy solution. The real solution is for us to return to the principles of individual liberty and the presumption of freedom on which our system is supposed to be based. But there are steps we can take. Right to try legislation is a good one. If Jerry Brown will sign that and allow Californians the opportunity to use the medicines that could save their lives. But there are also rules such as what's called sunrise legislation. This is rules that legislatures pass that say we're not going to pass a new regulation unless it satisfies the following requirements. Now, you know, they could break that promise, but those sunrise rules in the states where they have been put in, places like Colorado and Arizona, have shown that they're more freedom friendly. There's also restrictions, at the administrative level. You know, these administrative agencies that pass these rules that restrict our lives, not even written by elected officials. You know, there's restrictions on those that we can impose. In Arizona, we have a law that says an administrative agency cannot restrict economic freedom without a vote of the legislature. They're just not allowed to do it. So there are steps that we can take to roll back this idea that our freedoms are privileges that the government gives to us. But the bottom line is the only way we really can do it is by a philosophical consideration about what the direction our society is going in and saying to our elected officials, our lives and our freedom belong to us, not to you. It's not up to you to decide whether to let us exercise our freedom of speech or whatever it might be.
Will you even watch the debate Monday night with the two mainstream candidates involved?
No.
That's the answer I expected.
I'd basically be watching a person talk to himself. What's the point?
Well, it's going to be a fuster cluck, Tim. That's why.
The entertainment value alone.
That's what I rely on you guys for, is to filter out the boring parts and laugh at the funny parts.
Oh, I tell you what, and it's killing my soul, well, by the way. Glad you're enjoying it.
I'll tell you what kills you is if you are it's time to have the pendulum swing the other direction. This is our big break, libertarian-minded person. This is the year! This is the year to really make a dent, and it just ain't happening for a variety of reasons.
Yeah.
Can't get Gary Johnson on the stage.
Sad, sad, sad.
How hard is it?
Well, the system is going to resist any efforts to change it. And I'm reminded of a friend of mine was once asked, who do you think is going to win the presidential election? And without missing a beat, he said, the government.
Good one. That's a good answer right there.
Wow, that's a great answer.
No kidding.
Which, by the way, and I know this will not exactly scratch you where you itched, Tim, that's why Trump's so popular.
Oh, I agree that's why he's so popular. I think, the reason why people support demagogues is because they're so frustrated with the existing system that it gives demagogues an opportunity to use the system to benefit themselves. That's exactly what's going on here. It's a frightening thought, but there's no question that that's what's going on.
By the way, the term demagogue means a brave and wise hero. Jack, you had something to say?
I don't. We don't have much time for this complicated answer, but is there an example in history of a society starting to go back the direction you're talking about? Or because it seems like it only goes one way to me.
No, I think there is. I mean, we saw it in a small scale in the 80s with the Reagan Revolution. It was a small scale, but it was a step in the right direction. We saw it with the elimination of restrictions on the market in the years following World War II that opened up for such tremendous prosperity in the post-war world. And there's absolutely no reason in the world why the American people could not stand up tomorrow and say, we're taking back our freedom. We're not going to allow either party to tell us that our freedoms are privileges that they get to decide what to give.
I don't doubt that, and maybe the enthusiasm for Trump is a sign of hope for that or whatever, but just individual anecdotal evidence I get from people, there's a lot of people that like being taken care of. They like the somebody's to blame for everything that happens to me, so I should sue. They just like that.
Oh, they do. And there's a great, actually, I'll recommend some more reading to you. You should get the book or the very short story called The Grand Inquisitor by Dostoevsky. It's a wonderful reflection on this. It's a story where Jesus returns to this small village and is arrested and is put on trial, and the local priest comes and tells him that he's going to burn him at the stake tomorrow because what he offers man is freedom, and what the state offers man is safety, and what man really wants is safety rather than freedom. It's beautifully written, and it's a real testament to the dilemma that we face, where people would prefer to be coddled by the state rather than free. The problem is, when the government promises you safety in exchange for your freedom, what you have is not actually safe, because then you belong to the government, and it can do whatever it wants to.
I think I saw him, Dostoevsky. He was on Hannity the other night, pushing his book.
Yeah, with the beard, yeah. Tim Sandifer's on the line. The book is The Permission Society. And Tim, we're going to run late. We just are, because this may be the most important thing we ever talk about. I think, and I've got to distill this down into a few semi-eloquent words. I'll probably lose my train of thought or interest halfway through it and never get it done. But unlike you, with your whole book writing thing and finishing things deal you do. but what we've got to do is come up with a fairly short, eloquent way to communicate the following to people. And that is, as you're thinking about, for instance, the right to try law with the medicine, the experimental medicine. Do we let a dying person try this medicine that's safe but may not be effective? Well, let me think what's best for them. We've got to get people back to mind your own business, because that allows me to run my own life. The very question, Jerry Brown, of, well, what's best for these sick people is not properly answered by you. It's not properly answered by anybody but the person being affected. And it just makes me crazy. It's rampant busybodyism. And it's not on steroids. It's like nuclear-armed busybodyism. You dare not confront it. And I think it's – and it exists on a very individual level, the idea that we should decide for each other.
Yeah, the idea that I know better how you should live your life. It's deeply ingrained in people, and it's taught to them by the society. I mean, for one thing, they all go to government-run schools where they're taught that this is a good thing, so that's not surprising that they emerge from that thinking that, oh, well, I should run the state in order to provide for other people because I know better what's good for their lives. On the other hand, while we're in the middle of all this pessimism, also we need to stop and look at how much progress we have made. I mean, just 100 or 200 years ago, whole sections of our society had basically no freedom at all. And although our restrictions today are more than we would like them to be, we are a very free people. We have still a culture that appreciates individualism, entrepreneurship, and a person striving to live his own life. And we should celebrate that. The story of the 20th century especially is the story of opening doors of freedom and opportunity for people. The fall of the Berlin Wall, the civil rights movement of the 60s, freedom for women in the United States in broader ways than had ever been imagined before. These are great accomplishments, and we should celebrate those and perpetuate them. We owe it to our children to leave the world as free as we found it, or freer.
a cheery note to end on. Tim Sandifer, the book is The Permission Society, How the Ruling Class Turns Our Freedoms into Privileges and What We Can Do About It. Tim, it's always enlightening. Everybody needs to read the book, make it their kid's bedtime story, leave pages on city buses, et cetera. Tim, great to talk
to you. Hey, Tim, I want you to check your phone. I just texted you a picture. I just texted you a picture of me wearing my Make America Great Again hat.
Shame on you.
All right, Tim, we'll talk soon, bud.
Thank you, guys, and thanks for the inspiration.
Oh, my God. Thanks for mentioning us in your book.
I texted him a picture of me wearing my Make America Great Again hat.
I can't wait to read his reply off the air.
As secretary, how many words per minute could you type? And how does President Obama like his coffee? Like himself? Weak?
You know, Zach, those are really out-of-date questions. You need to get out more.
What happens if you become pregnant? Are we going to be stuck with Tim Kaine for 9 months? How does this work?
I could send you some pamphlets that might help you understand.
That is hilarious.
All I want to know is there more?
Oh, my God. I want an hour of that. So that's Zachanophagus.
Zach Galifianopoulos.
From Between Two Ferns. God dang it. That first question is funny. So when you were secretary, how fast can you type? And how did the president like his coffee the way he is? Weak.
Do we have any more of it?
Yeah. God dang it. That's funny.
She's really good on it. Yeah.
Wow.
Let's talk about Trump.
Let's.
When he's elected president and Kid Rock becomes Secretary of State, are you going to move to Canada or one of the Arctics?
I would stay in the United States.
And what would you try to?
Try to prevent him from destroying the United States.
So you're going to lead the Civil War?
No, I wouldn't take up arms. I think that might be a little extreme.
Oh, right, because you were saying before we were rolling that you wanted to take away everyone's guns. Very cool. Cool.
I really regret doing this.
Any regrets over losing the Scott Baio vote?
Not a one.
So it wasn't heartbreaking that...
No.
Yeah, but Chachi, I mean, who's going to be next? Max Headroom?
I wish you could see the visual, because you were saying before we started rolling you were going to take away everyone's guns.
Move to Canada or one of the Arctics. What the hell?
And she goes, I'm not moving to Canada.
He is one funny dude.
Yeah. I love that character he's created, too. That's really good.
God, and I saw him on Charlie Rose where he was talking about his starting out as a stand-up comedian and how one of his first gigs at Disney was to, in theory, entertain people on the bus. So as people were waiting, the buses in the parking lot waiting to get filled up with people to take them to the hotel or to the park or whatever,
right.
He was supposed to get on there and tell jokes while people are getting off and on and getting settled in the bus. And, of course, it'd just be a miserable experience. It wouldn't work. Nobody'd laugh. Nobody's paying any attention. Nobody. Oh, my God.
It toughens you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, if you go into YouTube and find some of his early stand-up, it's some of the most unique kind of stand-up that you've ever seen. It's really interesting stuff.
Yeah, first time he hosted Saturday Night Live and he was the host, I thought, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Oh, really?
His thing where he sits at the piano, he plays a couple things, and he says something wacky that he plays.
Yeah, that's a bunch of his early stand-up. Oh. He doesn't have segues for his jokes, so he just kind of has little musical interludes in between random thoughts.
And it's so great. Just unbelievable. What a funny guy.
You know, to suck the fun back out of it, as I often do, I was thinking about his gig on the bus, and I was sitting around thinking of this the other day, because I was dealing with something I really didn't want to deal with. It's kind of unfortunate. I won't bore you with the details. But I started thinking, if I got out of everything, or you know, to use somewhat biblical language, if I were delivered from everything I thought, Lord, deliver me from this. Don't make me go through this. Don't make this better. If I'd gotten that wish, how different a person would I be?
Mm.
If
he didn't have to do all the crappy stuff?
Well, yeah, and deal with all the gut-wrenching stuff and absorb the blows of fate through the years.
Right.
All those things I, with great sincerity, thought, oh, God, don't leave me unemployed with two babies. I do not. This is bad. This is, no. And having gone through that, it was really important, and it was great.
Well, you wouldn't have robbed those banks, so that would have been a change.
You know, their employees are robbing them, according to the Wells Fargo story. Everybody's robbing everybody. Who's to cast aspersions?
That is a very good point. But while you're in the midst of one of those things, you certainly don't think, well, this has got to be a net positive.
You know, if my leg was severed in a bear attack, I probably wouldn't look back on that. And so, you know that bear attack, when he was chewing off my leg, that was a real learning experience. I mean, there's a limit.
Yeah.
Obviously.
That's funny stuff right there. I'm surprised Hillary went along with that. She doesn't really like unscripted, you know.
I think there were probably discussions about what jokes would be left out.
You're listening to The Armstrong and Getty Show.